the headlines this hour, the giant oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico enters its 35th day. The UN chief hails Iran's nuclear swap declaration.
If accepted and implemented, it could serve as an important confidence-building measure and open the door for a negotiated solution to the Iranian nuclear issue.
And also this hour, the International Monetary Fund urges quick action to control Spain's deficit.
It is midnight in Madrid, Spain, and 6 p.m. in Washington, D.C. This is Press TV's World News.
Many thanks for joining us this hour. Well, crude oil continues to leak in the Gulf of Mexico with no end in sight. It has now been more than a month since an explosion on a BP oil rig led to the disaster. On Monday, U.S. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar pledged to, quote, keep boots on BP's neck until it manages to contain the spill. Salazar even threatened to push BP out of the way if necessary. The oil giant is facing charges that it has tried to hide the truth about the amount of crude leaking into the water. Earlier on Monday, the company pledged $500 million to study the spill's impact on the environment. And it says it's preparing to inject heavy drilling fluids into the well and seal it with cement on Wednesday. Thousands of barrels of oil have been gushing into the water every day since April the 20th.
Last year, nearly 14,000 tons of crude oil was spilled in the Niger Delta by Royal Dutch Shell. Press TV's Danjuma Abdullahi explains the challenges facing both the oil company and Nigeria since the incident.
In its annual environment report, Shell admits that it spilled 13,900 tons of crude oil into the swamps of Nigeria's Niger Delta. The volume of oil spill, according to experts, is unacceptable, especially in the Niger Delta, which covers close to 51,800 square kilometers of wetlands and is home to 150 species of fish and other wildlife.
The oil impact affects the environment by way of reduction in fertility of the soil, and because of the access of human beings to eat, the fumes and other parameters that are considered when we are doing laboratory analysis also have some form of negative impact or the other on human health.
The company blamed most of the 2009 oil spills on oil thieves who targeted pipelines, especially the Trans-Escravos one, and a wellhead at its Odidi field. Shell says it was able to recover nearly 10,000 tons of that oil. The Nigerian Federal Ministry of Environment was aware of the oil spills and referred them to the Oil Spill Detection and Response Agency.
Going by the presentation they made to us of recent, they have programmed about 200 oil impacted sites for remediation this year. And they have also programmed the number of impacted sites they will remediate next year. And all of these were appropriately following up for monitoring and certification after the remediation exercise.
Shell Petroleum, which has been in Nigeria for over 50 years, says Nigeria, especially the Niger Delta, remains a challenging place to operate. Security issues and sabotage, it says, are a constant threat to its assets, people, and the environment. Shell, before the amnesty program, used to face regular attacks by militants who have targeted pipelines, kidnapped petroleum company workers, and fought government troops. The Niger Delta militants say they are campaigning for more of Nigeria's oil wealth to be used to benefit the Niger Delta communities. Anjum Abdullahi, Press TV, Abuja.
The UN says Iran's recent nuclear fuel swap declaration could be a major confidence-building measure if endorsed by the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Well, Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has confirmed that Tehran sent a letter to the IAEA on the proposed deal it brokered with Brazil and Turkey last week.
If accepted and implemented, it could serve as an important confidence-building measure and open the door for a negotiated solution to the Iranian nuclear issue.
Well, based on the declaration, Iran has agreed to exchange some of its low-enriched uranium stocks with higher-enriched fuel in Turkey. The fuel will be used in a Tehran research reactor that produces medical radioisotopes to treat cancer. In other news, human rights activists are planning to break the Israeli blockade of the Gaza Strip.
The activists plan to ferry aid to the besieged coastal enclave on board a handful of ships. A Turkish charity group says 9 ships called the Freedom Flotilla will take part in the humanitarian mission. The Foundation of Humanitarian Relief says the ships from Turkey, Ireland, Britain and Greece will reach Gaza on Wednesday evening if all goes as planned. Israel has warned it will not allow the 8 ships to reach Gaza, but the campaign members say they are determined to get the job done. Gaza has been under an Israeli siege since 2007. Tel Aviv has so far ignored all international calls to lift the blockade.
Well, the Israeli parliament has passed a bill that imposes tougher conditions on Palestinian prisoners. Hamas members in Israeli jails are now denied benefits and certain conditions. Here's more.
While Israel has promised to ease restrictions on Palestinians in the West Bank, the Knesset's ministerial committee passed a bill that would impose tougher conditions on thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. The new bill is said to be targeting Hamas inmates with the aim of putting pressure on the movement to release the captured Israeli soldier, Gilad Shalit. According to the passed bill, Palestinian prisoners would be stripped of their right to family visits. They would also no longer be able to watch television and receive newspapers and books, and would lose the right to get university education in prison. Hamas and PA leaders, as well as Arab members of the Knesset, slammed the bill, saying it runs counter to the international law.
Israel is completely ignoring the international laws, particularly the Fourth Geneva Convention concerning the prisoners of war. The decision also contradicts Israel's promises to boost proximity talks by easing the restrictions in the West Bank.
The Geneva Convention on the Treatment of Prisoners, to which Israel is a signatory, stipulates that prisoners of war and political detainees are not to be withheld their right to family visits. However, Israel denies that Palestinian prisoners should be treated as prisoners of war. More than 7,500 Palestinians internationally recognized as war prisoners are still held in Israeli prisons. Human rights groups say conditions in Israeli jails were already very tight even before the recently passed bill.
This is an addition to a very serious situation where most of them are deprived from visits for the 3 or 4 years already, where many of them are detained in solitary cells in isolation. It's a whole series of violations that cannot be accepted by any norm or by any law.
Shortly after Gilad Shalit's capture in 2006 by some members of resistance groups in a cross-border raid, Israel launched a detention operation targeting Hamas lawmakers in an attempt to pressure the movement to reveal the soldiers' whereabouts. Many of them remain in Israel's custody, something which has effectively made the Palestinian Legislative Council failed to reach a quorum. The German brokered prisoner swap deal between Israel and Hamas that could potentially secure the release of thousands of Palestinians in Israeli jails in exchange for Shalit remains at a standstill. In the meantime, prisoners have warned that they would escalate their strikes. Sara Al-Khalili, Press TV, Ramallah.
Elsewhere in the Middle East, an Iraqi politician who recently won a seat in parliament has been shot dead. Bashar al-Hamid was shot in front of his home in the northern city of Mosul. He was affiliated with the Iraqiya list headed by former Prime Minister Iyad Allawi. Police say a suspect has been arrested. The Iraqiya coalition won 2 seats more than Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's bloc in the parliamentary elections in March. But none of the lists have enough votes to form a government. Well, for more on that killing, we're now joined by Ali Al-Ahmed, who's director of the IJA, who's joining us via satellite from Washington. Mr. Al-Ahmed, as always, thank you for joining our broadcast. Now, the United States' involvement in the post-election wrangling goes against its pledge to steer clear of internal politics within Iraq. So how much is U.S. involvement responsible, maybe, for this kind of violence and constant wrangling?
Well, the international or the United States involvement in the local Iraqi elections had made it very complicated. And it's causing Iraqis themselves to take sides and to seek allies outside the Iraqi political arena. And that is going to take away some of the legitimacy or a lot of the legitimacy of the Iraqi election process. We have seen this before, and that will really undermine the democratic process. This is an Iraqi process and should be an Iraqi process without interfering from the outside. This international or United States or American interference in the Iraqi democratic process also gives fuel to extremists to say that democracy and voting is a plan by the West or by the enemies of the region or the people in the region. So this is a problematic situation where sometimes American intervention in the local process in Iraq provides the extremists with a platform to even murder people like Mr. Hammadi.
Right. Now, much will be made of the sectarian aspects of this assassination, yet all sides have condemned it. Considering the Iraqi bloc is actually a mix of Sunnis and Shias, how can the West spin it to seem sectarian?
Well, this is not really a sectarian situation because the victim here is a Sunni. This is a Sunni city, and the killer is most likely a Sunni extremist. So this is really is not a sectarian issue. The problem has been, especially with the United States, when Iraq has been their accusation of sectarianism is targeted only against the Shia. They have not levied such accusations against Sunnis in Iraq or against Sunni regimes in the region like Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, who are extremist sectarian governments at all aspects. Indeed, they're dealing with the Shia majority and minority in both countries. So you have a double standard with American policy when using the accusation of sectarianism. In Iraq, the Iraqi government is not sectarian by all means. The president and the head of the parliament are both Sunnis. And the government, about 45% of the ministers in the Iraqi government are Sunni. So this is not a sectarian government by any means. But it has been used by the American government under Bush and Obama to accuse the Iraqi government of sectarianism, and this is wrong. Where if you want to find sectarianism, you have to go to Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and maybe some other Gulf countries.
Now, sir, an Iraqi member has said, and I'm quoting him now, the motivation of this killing is purely political, and it is part of the vicious scheme carried out by some groups that want to keep anarchy in this country, end quote. What will keeping anarchy alive achieve for those groups?
Well, the some countries in the region find democracy and the popular choice of government really goes against their own stability and existence. So governments in the region, especially in the GCC countries, who are they base their ruling on monarchy and sheikhdom based on family government, they will want to destroy any process that allows the people to speak, to choose their government. So the democracy process, the parliamentary elections, any process that brings in people to make different policy in the government, to affect the policy of the government in the Gulf are going to undermine it by supporting extremism and even underlining the assassination of elected officials, and this has been happening for 7 years. So they want to create an association between democracy and anarchy. So people, the societies in Iraq and maybe in the region will reject democracy because it is associated with anarchy, where absolute monarchy is associated with stability. And that's the kind of perception they're trying to create in the minds of their own people and the mind of the Iraqi people as well.
Right. Well, Mr. Ali Al-Ahmed, we will have to leave it there for now. Mr. Ali Al-Ahmed, director of the IG, joining us there via satellite from Washington. Sir, as always, thank you very much for your insight.
Thank you.
Well, in other news, a bomb blast in western Afghanistan has killed 5 people and injured 8 others. The bomb ripped through a minibus in Farah province. The victims were all civilians. Authorities have blamed the attack on Taliban militants. The incident comes just a day after the militants fired on a minibus in northern Baghlan province, killing 3 civilians. The Taliban recently threatened a new campaign of attacks against Afghan officials and foreign forces.
A bomb blast has killed at least 2 people in Pakistan's Balochistan province. Officials have told Press TV that the bomb was planted in a rickshaw in the provincial capital, Quetta. As many as 14 people, including children and women, were injured in the blast. No group or individual has claimed responsibility for the explosion so far.
Well, the International Monetary Fund has called on Spain to take urgent measures to control its deficit. This as the European Union faces a deepening debt crisis. The IMF says the Spanish economy needs, quote, far-reaching and comprehensive reforms. It calls Spain's economic woes severe and says the Spanish government should push ahead with austerity measures. The IMF also wants Madrid to reform the country's banking system. The Spanish government agrees with the IMF's assessment and it says it will take immediate action. Spain has unveiled a 2-year, 15 billion euro austerity plan. This follows the public debt crisis in Greece. There are growing fears that other eurozone vulnerable economies will get affected.
You're watching the World News here on Press TV. A quick reminder of our top stories this hour. The giant oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico enters its 35th day. UN chief hails Iran's nuclear swap declaration.
If accepted and implemented, it could serve as an important confidence-building measure and open the door for a negotiated solution to the Iranian nuclear issue.
The International Monetary Fund urges quick action to control Spain's deficit.